Welcome back to Pax Europiana, the podcast about peace in Europe. Now section 20, we'll start with section 20.2. That's about the European Austria. In section 20, I will basically talk about all my reform proposals about Austria and what Austria should look like, why it's not a European Austria I dream of and many have dreamt of in the 90s, what is the challenges, what needs to be done, and what needs to be changed. Yeah. I will then go step by step and really make a lot of serious on that one, because I'm from Austria, you know, I really love that country. I was born here, again, went to school and university here, and I lived in Linz and Vienna. That's the two towns I will talk most of it. But I know all of Austria very well, actually, because of all my political activities and my effort in many youth and student organizations. So I know it pretty well whenever I lived almost 20 years abroad. But also I bring this kind of perspective of my years in Southeastern Europe, in Ukraine, but also my many different travels and my outside experience. I think I'm out of the box Austrian in a sense, and I bring this perspective. I know Austria is not the most important country in the world. That's I want to start. So some people will say, oh, why so much Austria in this podcast? But I will also talk about Albania. I will talk about Ukraine. I will talk about many of the countries in Europe. And step by step, as much time I have, I will also cover other countries. But I want to start with Austria because it's my native country. It's also a very beautiful and very nice country. And the principles which I will discuss are valid basically for everybody. Wherever you are, wherever you listen, please, whenever you care for Europe and you have been, you are European or you love Europe or you are related somehow to Europe, it will be always relevant because basically it's about the European unification and bringing Europe up to speed, modernization, and many of these important aspects. So let me start with the first, more general, and I will add all the points in the first podcast, and then I will go step by step for specific topics. So why Austria is not European Austria I want? Obviously, we are on the European continent. That's 100% sure. Obviously, we are in the European Union. And true. Since 1995, the referendum was won and we have changed and we have improved a lot. Austria is much more open country now. It's much richer country now. It's much more, it's much improved country. But the problem is in our mentality, we are still very landlocked and we are very introvert and the politics has not changed. We changed the characters of the game, and I will talk about that one. But our mentality is still this island of the saints, an island of peace, and the rest of the world is crazy, and we are the only sane people, and we are the neutral ones. And all this is completely untrue, because it was never that way. It's an illusion on which this Austrian myth is built. And it's absolutely toxic in our relation with our European neighbors. And it leads also now, especially when there is this kind of populist mood in Europe, unfortunately, especially in Austria, that leads to a lot of wrong policy decisions. Concretely, let me get very concrete because I don't want to talk around. First of all, as you know, Austria, please join NATO. This is the most important single issue which is really differentiating Austria from another European Union countries. We were taken on a kind of exemption basis in the European Union, but up to the accession of Austria, everybody but Ireland, which is a very specific country, was in NATO. And that's basically one unit, EU and NATO. And it's only Austria and Sweden, Finland then making it more complicated. Whereas Austria is making it much more complicated than Sweden and Finland, who are already much more integrated in NATO. And they are already in the Advanced Opportunity Partnership, where Austria is not. We also don't spend a lot of defense. We keep up this obligatory draft of our military services. Yeah? And that's all totally wrong. What we need is to come to terms, increase our spending at least to the German level of 1.5. That means to double our spending, to make a real professional army. No conscription, no military draft, because we need specialists who are also ready to serve abroad. We need to be more active in the Balkan peace operations, where already we are doing something, but also to help in the NATO missions. And it's a profession. It's not that any military coup will take over power or something like this. Military is a profession of volunteers. You choose that, or it's not a, we are not in a war preparation phase where it's justified to have a military draft. This is all totally wrong, mythical from the Austrian Civil War of the 30s, which we had in 34, and we had a lot of problems in the abuse of the military and from the monarchy. There's a lot of ideological ballast in the Austrian kind of state, and we have to modernize Austria, Europeanize, I call it. Yeah? And one of the things to start this debate is NATO membership and also the removal of the obligatory service. Military is a profession like the police. Yeah? You choose to defend it. You must be also deployable. That means you must be able to send to NATO missions. It's a voluntary thing. It's one line of work. It's not that we are going to be attacked. That's not. There will be no Russian tanks rolling into Vienna. That is the long gone past. What is true is that we have terrorist situations, failed states. We have to act together as solidarity in Europe. We have to also enlarge NATO, absolutely. And that's also important because Austrian neutrality is a bad role model for Serbia and for Bosnia and for all these anti-Americans and anti-NATO forces who are in fact in reality pro-Russian forces. And they exist as well in Bosnia and Serbia and also to some extent in Ukraine. And we are like a negative example for them. And this neutrality leads also our politicians to promote such neutrality everywhere. And that's for me unforgivable. If Austrian Chancellor Kurz going to Ukraine, which was neutral and was attacked by Russia, because it was a neutral state before, it was attacked by Russia, and then Sebastian Kurz goes to Ukraine and recommends Austrian neutrality to the Ukrainians after they have been attacked while they were neutral. And that's a kind of a provocation for me. Yeah? I cannot forgive such bullshit, yeah? To say it very clearly. Yeah? It's unforgivable for me. Yeah? That's a provocation for any intelligent person in the world. Yeah? It's a kind of unspeakable. No. So we are a bad role model. We are really doing this totally wrong because we were from the beginning. I will also talk a lot about history, but we were from the beginning protected by the Americans. Yeah? And they have also left after the state treaty because that was the compromise with the Soviets to make the Soviets leave. But obviously it was clear that the Americans to a big extent will at least protect Western Europe, Western Austria. And they would definitely have done that. Yeah. So it's a tragedy that this has all got this own dynamic with a lot of people profiting from it, because it leads also to a wrong relation with Russia. By the way, we are not a bridge to Russia. We are a EU member state since 1995. We are obliged and we want to be a EU member state. We have common security policy in Europe. We are not a bridge to anybody. We are not the place to meet Iranian dictators. We are not the place to somehow be the energy bridge or the political bridge to Russia. If the Americans want to talk to Moscow, they don't need Vienna. We are not the Vienna Congress of 1850. We are not the KNK monarchy. We are just a medium-sized, normal member state of the European Union, which for some kind of internal blockage is not part of NATO. But we have no mission to bridge between the superpowers. We have no mission to block American policy in Iran. It's not our DNA. We are just a EU member state. And that's beautiful to be. Yeah? It's wonderful. It's great, yeah? It helps us, it's solidaric, it's we share, we contribute, we benefit. We just have to do that. There is no Kreisky's mission of intervening in the Middle East or so. Yeah? We can do that as part of our European policy, then we also have impact. It's not our role to play off the superpowers. We are not a northern Yugoslavia, and we are not the heirs of Tito. No, no, no. No, no, no. If anybody, Mr. Kurz should be, that's our prime minister, I think that's quite clear, he's quite famous, but I don't agree with any of his policies on most things in the foreign policy. He says Kreisky is his ideal, yeah? That's the former prime minister of Austria in the 70s. He was in the Cold War very much against the Americans and doing his own policies, grandstanding as if he would be the monarch of the Austrian Empire, together with Brandt and Olaf Palme, making their own peace policy everywhere and being completely annoying for the Americans. And as you know already, I'm very pro-American. And, you know, to stretch the patience of our protecting power so thin, it was really very bad, yeah? And that is what I'm completely against, and also in our relation to Russia, because neutrality has now basically turned into a kind of protective smokescreen to be the hub of money laundering for Russia is now Austria. Obviously, also there is Cyprus and Ireland and Luxembourg. We are not the only target and not the only, but in Switzerland, obviously, as well, has a very negative role here. But in many ways, we are one of the centers, and we are among the big five money laundering centers for Russia in the European Union. And is that really necessary that we somehow fall into the back of anything we say in Brussels or we claim to be towards the Austrian public? Then when the Russian embassy calls, we say, okay, we can make an exemption. Okay, we look away. Okay, doesn't matter. The most important is you pay. It's not so good position, especially when you claim to be morally superior, neutral. You shouldn't do that. Yeah, that's my opinion. Anyhow, there's also many internal things in Austria, but I think I will now talk first of all about the EU policy. Because it's the European Union and we are a member. Then and the first from 95 to basically 2004, 2007, in the first 12 years, Austria was very pro-European. You know, there was also this fresh kind of start, despite the sanctions we had in 2000 because of allowing the populists into the government. It was still, you know, quite positive. We were also including new countries. That was great. Yeah? But somehow later with the financial crisis and fully in 2014 and now completely, we only talk pro-European, but we oppose all real enlargements. Since Croatia, we have not done anything decent for the new countries. We have opposed Ukraine, Georgia, Moldova to have the potential candidate countries. We have opposed Schengen and free movement of workers for Croatia, Romania, Bulgaria, as long as it was possible, always saying yes nicely in the face of these leaders, but in Brussels voting against. Nominally, also the current government is pro-European, but in reality, you know, for some kind of Macron timeline. Yes, it's something to say nice. Yes, Albania is, we are for Western Balkan EU integration. But, you know, when you then say, but in 2040, how serious it is, yeah? I mean, yes, I love you, but only when you're dead, yeah? Basically, that's the kind of message, yeah? Maybe I exaggerate, yeah? Anyhow, it's not really a pro-European approach. Okay, not everybody has to agree with me with fast-track accession of Albania, Macedonia, Macedonia, Montenegro, as NATO allies immediately, but to say it in some way in the future, long distance, but the Western Balkan is our friend. And in reality, you cut the borders in 2015, you close the borders during the migration crisis, during the corona crisis, and any meaningful time in between, the most important reflex in Austria is to close the borders to the Balkans and to Slovenia, Hungary. So, please, this is so unserious and this is so bad. Austria has benefited the most of all European countries from the reintegration of our natural economic space, which for 300 or 400 years was basically Central Europe united. obviously, you know, the Hungarian, Austrian-Hungarian monarchy was a customs and currency union. Yeah? There was not anything else much united in this empire. The British always call it the ramshackle empire. But, you know, at least, you know, the customs, there were even, you know, some things about the customs. But in basic way, most of Central Europe was united by a currency and customs union in the free trade area, obviously. That was the monarchy. It was breaking up. And then in 1918, it is now basically more or less, with some exemptions like Bosnia and parts of Serbia and Ukraine, it's more or less united again in the European Customs Union and in the European Currency Union, unfortunately not completely, because some countries still are not in the Eurozone, like Hungary and like Croatia. But, you know, gradually we're getting back to normality, to a big, wide, open space of Central European unity of, and that's also the basis for prosperity, because in this very difficult region, economically and geographically, you need this openness in order to succeed. The small countries alone have never produced any meaningful prosperity in the history. Only in a big, wide customs and currency union we can succeed in Central Europe because of this historic fragmentation. And so it is now very successful, Austria so enormously benefiting. We could do much more if we would also open our political system, because our politicians, this doesn't matter which age they are, and the kind of group thinking of our politicians is really deeply problematic. This anti-American consensus, the anti-NATO consensus, and this kind of anti-German consensus, also the consensus anti-Balkan, and this pro-Russian thinking. This is basically sums it up pretty well. It goes in differences with the parties. But, you know, this consensus is there even in the more pro-Western parties which we have. And that's really very different than in Sweden, where basically all parties are pro-Western. We are really deeply problematic in our political system, because our economy was under competitive pressure since the 90s, since the opening, and they have really Europeanized. Yeah? They have globalized even. We have a lot of very good companies. We have also great people. Our people is great, you know, amazing, clever, smart inventors and technicians and entrepreneurs. But the problem is our political class. It's stuck in some past. Doesn't matter if they are young or old. Yeah. Unfortunately, I was also thinking younger people will bring some kind of momentum for change. But I'm pretty disappointed because it's not happening. And then let's talk about of some of the anomalies of the Austrian internal system. They are also quite similar to Hungary and to Croatia. You will find it in most of the smaller and medium-sized economies in Europe. Because where's the economic reason behind it? Smaller, medium countries can be easily controlled by the political elite. Yeah? So what's happening? And you need two leverages. You need to corner the political system. That means you need to make sure you have political votes, to have votes, to have power, obviously. For that, you need money. So you need to control the economy and you need to control the media. So how, in a more or less, you know, because we have in Austria also EU regulation and we are a rule of law country, and also it's helpful to control some parts of the judiciary. That's also a very important aspect. So these are the three leverages of power. We are obviously not a police state, so controlling of the military and the police is less important. But also the Austrian parties, the moment they are in the Ministry of Interior, we divide everything up. We try to control the police as well. Also the secret service are highly politicized and controlled by the political parties. And it leads to a lot of negative effects because they are not doing their job properly, like fighting against terrorism or against extremism, what normal secret services should do. But fighting against Russian espionage, that's basically nobody doing in Austria. We are definitely the center of the spying of the Russian Federation in Central Europe. But it's also, you know, because we have this problem and the high media concentration. That's one of the biggest problems. The state is the most important buyer of media time in Austria via the political parties or via the ministries directly. then we have a very concentrated media situation, which are highly dependent on state contracts. So this kind of mésalliance between the few publishers we have, it's basically three families, and it's basically three business groups, families, business groups, and maybe four. And it's then basically an oligopol of opinions in Austria and the state television. And that's controlled by the political parties as well. And that's the one big thing. The other big thing is the Austrian history has resulted in this huge state sector. And, you know, we abhor anything like competition control. That's very un-Austrian in a way. So we all do everything in collusive kind of low, in, you know, it's always under the radar screen. Because when we joined the European Union, it was very clear that we have to implement all these regulations of competition. It was a big shock for the Austrian economy. But now the system has adopted to do everything so compliant to the EU regulation that you can do great collusive agreements without getting caught. So basically that's the way that works. And direct control in the massive state sector, in the massive state banking sector, and in the whole, after the financial crisis, everybody totally dependent on the state. So that's absolutely one of the key leverages of the political system, the direct control of the state energy sector, the state infrastructure sector, like the motorways and the railways, obviously, but all energy companies are mostly owned by the state. Of course, you know, nobody says it like this, and they are 51% owned by the state, but this is totally objective, and it's totally transparent and everything according to the law, obviously. You know, it's, oh, I don't say it's not against the law, but it's against the spirit of competition. Because we have a highly state-concentrated public enterprise sector, and that's a major problem. And also our famous system of collective negotiations, collective bargaining, and social partnership is also a mega collusive system. Because how it works in the practice, most of the big private entrepreneurs in Austria, the families, they are also sitting in the Chamber of Commerce or in the Federation of Industry. And so on the other side, do the representative of the labor movement. Yeah? And then they meet and discuss about wage collective bargaining, but also they go into the boards of the state companies. Yeah? And then basically the concentration level and the informal collusive level is so high, and it's so compliant, you know, it's not illegal. Now nobody is doing something, or hopefully not something illegal. But obviously when it comes about the big jobs, when it comes about the decisions what to do or what to sell, nobody wants to sell anything, don't worry. That would be too much privatization. Then you are immediately ultra-liberal if you think that the private sector should be somehow participating. And anyhow, the private sector is also part of the collusive network because of our social partnership, which makes in many ways a lot of sense. Yeah, if the spirit is to improve things, yeah, but if the spirit is to control things and to block changes, then obviously it's negative. And it's always a question how you do it. And that's a big problem. And I have already called many times for privatization of state companies, for if it's not possible for political reasons, then to transfer it to the European level, have European infrastructure companies, European energy companies, at least in Europe, the direct access of the Austrian political collusive corrupt system is much less. And that would help already a better kind of shareholder and stakeholder and taxpayer results for all this. The other problem is our unclear system in the federal system. We have much less federal system like the Germans. We have more centralism, but there's also good things in centralism when it comes, for example, to digital government. Yes, you know, there's good things there as well. Also in a crisis like during Corona, it makes sense. But in principle, power should be devolved, yeah? And we should have clarity who is doing what. Yeah? And we have a lot of duplication. I'm very much for a strong Styria and a strong Tyrol and you know, very strong in responsibility. But what we do is we have very diffuse kind of line of responsibilities overlapping everywhere with duplications, and it needs to be somehow reorganized in a really strong free federal Austria, but on a European level where it's clear who does what, and also there is fiscal power for the regions and for the municipalities. Yeah, not everything in a big pot and then redistributed. Yeah, that's all pretty wrong, because the responsibilities in the system are pretty confused, and that's pretty wrong. So the federal reform also is important. Then also the economic system. I have talked already about our lack of a competitive culture and then of a competition culture. This can only be solved on the European level. We need direct line authority of the DG Enterprise on our competition authority. And this gentleman, who is the CEO of the competition authority, needs to be appointed by Brussels. That's for all countries absolutely necessary. In the rule of law, also let me understand, now in 2021, the great proposal came up that we should have a public prosecutor, a general public prosecutor, because we still don't have that. Yeah? And we don't have one which is independent from the Minister of Justice. In Austria to this moment, and I'm confident it will take much longer than now announced, yeah, it's still the case that the Minister of Justice is the supreme prosecutorial decision maker. So basically, when there is a political case, the state prosecutor has to ask the Minister of Justice if that's very convenient to investigate against his prime minister. I mean, that you then don't get any kind of clarity and not a lot of prosecution cases against the political elite. And those who you get is always about people who fell out of favor before, and they never are sentenced then to the long term. Yeah? No, none of these cases is really conclusive. And now we have Sarkozy even to be sentenced, at least. Yeah? So there is some kind of progress in France. And what we really need is also a European kind of FBI, where all these collusive state corruption networks, the moment there is one coming up, must be directly taken over by the European public prosecutor, in my view, and then also be judged in another member state or in Brussels. And bring all these ex-former finance ministers to Brussels, to a special chamber of the European Anti-Corruption Court, and there they will be sentenced pretty quickly, because the cases are all very clear. But it's this kind of completely politicized judicial system which we have, with a lot of ex-politicians sitting in the Supreme Court, then in their retirement, and, you know, one against each other, they all keep some kind of esprit de corps, and so we are not getting anywhere. And always my big topic, always the economic system. We have 50% top income tax. That's also something which I really never understood. We have also a very expansive social welfare system. I've already made the case. 28% of the GDP is very good. But we in Austria, we always talk about the 40% overall, but we never reach it. And we are one of the highest tax countries, with the highest spending, with the highest burden on the private economy, with low growth rates. And really, I think we should change that and have a 15% corporation tax, to have also 15% of income tax flat, to have higher wealth taxes via the property taxes, no wealth tax, but property tax, and the real value to be measured for the municipalities, to have clear VAT, not so many exemptions, but lower taxes on performance and higher taxes on consumptions. And also when it comes especially to the Austrian pension system, it has to be back in line to only 7% of the GDP to be publicly available for the pension system, and not we have at the moment 14 or somehow like that. Yeah. So here we come. This is my proposal for European Austria. I've talked now 30 minutes. I hope you're not completely shocked. These are the things which are out of line in the European context. These are the things which are the problem. No NATO, too much Russia, and that's basically too little enthusiasm for the European Union, too much illusions, too much collusion, too much corruption, and too expensive. In global competition, as we are today with everybody in the world, because everybody is free now, that's wonderful in theory, but in practical it means also that we have to work harder and perform better, and also somehow reform our systems. And let's be very sure, our systems were never so great anyhow, because we just have somehow survived under the cover of the Americans in the Cold War, and we have somehow muddled through, and with the help of the Germans we are allowed to enter the European Union. The French would have never allowed us in the European Union, and that's also a fact. And so we could be a little bit more modest. The real problem I have with Austrian elite and with Austrian generally, there is this kind of thinking that we are so amazing. Just the world hasn't seen it up to now. And so this is this arrogance, yeah. When you see also now in Corona, everybody thinks, yeah, we really did it very well, you know. When you see the numbers and when you see the reality and when you see many other factors, vaccination and so on, it's not that we are somehow God's gift for the world, that we did everything perfect, you know. And in no other aspect I can really see it, yeah. Neither in integration, policy, openness. Where are we really so good that we have such a case for such kind of missionary zeal to be seen as the perfect and the others have to learn from us? I can really not see that. Yeah, we are very expensive. We have basically been benefiting from all the additional labor and market opportunities of the opening. We have not reformed in the last 30 years, only when Europe wanted it. Yeah? When it was necessary. We have a little bit of phases of reform in the beginning of 2000s, when with some privatization, some better infrastructure. But, you know, honestly, where is the basis for our arrogance? I cannot see it. So these are the points. A more European Austria is possible and it's highly necessary. And the shock of Corona is hopefully a wake-up call for the Austrians also to ask for more transparency, less collusion, for better performance of our institutions, and for an end of this kind of Austrian exceptionalism, to think that we are the chosen people of peace and the rest is wrong and we are the only ones who know the way. That's really something I cannot understand on what that is based. Yeah? Must be very deep in the psyche. Maybe Freud could help us on that, I don't know. But in any case, it has to stop. We have to be a normal European country. Please, I call for European Austria. All friends of Austria, help us a bit. Remind Austria on its inconsistencies. Don't adore any new guy who comes and says, oh, we did it the Austrian way. No, just ask everybody to fulfill the obligations, the regulations, and really also to improve the Austrian administration, the real capacities, join NATO, be a responsible full member of the Western world, complete our Austrian Western integration success model by fully joining NATO and also fully being in the spirit a European, transparent, open member state of the European Union, and support enlargement and in support Ukraine, Kosovo, Bosnia in the EU, NATO, Euro, and stop this kind of Austrian blockade, which we have some years, and that would be really amazing. So I call for a European Austria, and I'm confident one day we will be fully, also in the spirit, Europeanized, and that would be fantastic. Thanks a lot for listening. Bye.